Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
I'm a feminist, but I quite enjoy ironing. I find it soothing because I don't actually have to do it. But what I really like about it is once I've ironed the ironing board for long enough, the cats come and sit on it. It's like they view it as me just warming up their little seat. It's adorable.
So it becomes a laptop for them.
Yeah, they just
love it. You've got a cat sit on your laptop because it's warm.
Yeah.
And there's that really sweet, you know, the Icon Has Cheeseburger thing where there's a little cat on a laptop and the cat's saying, if not for sits, why made of warm?
Oh, adorable.
Feminism and cat loving are so closely connected.
Errol Cat. I thought too that there should be like a, I liked the feminist version of The Bachelor, and it would be called The Spinster, and it would just be 12 women competing for the love of a cat.
I'm in for that. I'll be a contestant.
The only bad thing is about when that, because the cats now know that the ironing board is like the warm place to sit, is that if I'm ironing a dress, they will get inside the dress at the bottom and just kind of swing.
Ooh,
like a, like
dangerous.
They're in a hand-warmed hammock or something. It's a little bit irritating.
Dangerous. Dangerous for everybody. I'm a feminist, but I said to the tour producer last night in Melbourne, look, there's an exhibition at ACCA, which is the Australian Centre for Creative Arts. Contemporary arts. All arts are creative.
It's quite a long title, isn't it?
There's an exhibition at the Australian Centre for Contemporary Art, the art museum next door to this very lovely theatre, called Unfinished Business, Perspective on Art and Feminism. And I said, look, God, that's amazing. It's right there. I should go to that. And he said, yeah, but you won't, will you? And I said, no, you're right, I won't. Shuts at 5 and I don't have to be here till 6, so I'd have to get here really early.
Maybe you could just get someone to tell you about it. Like, is there anyone here that's been to it?
What's it like? Speechless.
I'm a feminist, but sometimes I wish I was a dude just so I could wee off a balcony. It just, I saw my friend's husband do it at New Year and it just looked really fun. And I was like, yeah, I could wee off a balcony, but it's kind of the aftermath that I'm not so good with. Like, it's just a bit sort of messy. Ah, yeah. Oh, I can't hold her captain. Like,
cis, you know. Cis men do have a super advantage on that kind of thing. It's one of the only things that makes me think there is a God and he's a man.
Maybe I just need to get a she-wee or something. Like, just a... Or like an icing piper or something. Obviously, I wouldn't use it again, but it's got a bit weird.
I mean, you could make lovely patterns.
Different shaped nozzles, so you could have... No, that doesn't work at all.
I'm a feminist, but when a friend tonight said he'd seen audience members walking out of feminist and African-American power film Black Panther, he'd seen them walking out in it, I said, well, hopefully their babysitter texted to say their child had died, because that's the only reason you should walk out of a film like that. And then I thought, that's probably not okay to say, and it's really not feminist.
Yeah, and do you think you would text news like that, or do you think that's worth a call?
Well,
probably just wouldn't...
A friend of mine came to the show in LA. She's actually quite a famous actress, and she was sitting there, and she said afterwards, she said, I was enjoying the show so much. I glanced down at the phone, and the babysitter had texted, child's name, let's say it was Tina, wasn't, Tina is dead. And she said, I thought, oh, that must be a typo. Because she said, I didn't want to go, so I just thought, probably not. She said, I was so into the show. She said, afterwards, I looked down and it actually said, Tina is in bed. But she said, I'd misread it and thought, that can't be right.
I would love to be that relaxed as a parent. Like, because I'm the opposite. Like, if my husband hasn't texted me back within 10 minutes, I'm like, well, he is dead. He's gone. Like, no more husband.
Is there a tiny bit of relief as you feel free? Like, there's a part of every married person where you do think, I mean, it would be a new chapter.
I feel this really ties in with your mindset of, like, the only reason you'd walk out of Black Panther would be if your child had died. And you're like, well, if your husband did die, fresh start.
Yeah. My husband edits this podcast, so this will end up very much on the cutting room floor. This is just for us in this room to enjoy. He's not putting that out there. I'm telling you that for nothing. Or if he does, it'll be in that bit at the end where he does a blooper at the end. It'll be there. I'm telling you that right now for nothing.
It's just the sound of him sobbing quietly underneath. But I love you, Deborah.
That's what it would be.
I'm a feminist, but the other day at the airport when my husband let me wheel my own heavy suitcase, I was a bit like, hey, lift your game. And my suitcase. To be fair, he was holding his own backpack and our son's backpack, but I was still like, but I'm tiny. But then when we first got together, like, I put my back out trying to prove that I could carry a chest of drawers by myself. So it's not like I need to prove anything to him.
No, I'm a feminist, but just before the show, Cal said, let's all go backstage and put our makeup on. And I said, my makeup is on. And Celia Piccola was there, and she said, oh, no, you look fresh, like you've come out of a dojo. Or a gazebo. And I went backstage and put on lots more makeup. Live from the Malt House in Melbourne, the Spontaneity Shop presents The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Frances White, and guest co-host Cal Wilson, and very special guest, Celia Piccola, talking about criticism. This is The Guilty Feminist, the podcast in which we explore our noble goals as 21st century feminists and the hypocrisies and insecurities which undermine them. Today we are talking about criticism. I mean, yeah, I know, it's terrifying. As feminists, when can we be criticised? By whom? When can we give criticism? When is criticism stultifying? When is criticism motivating? When is criticism necessary? When does it get us to change? When does it get us to fail? Why do we hate it so fucking much? Why is it so painful? Why is any tiny little minimal criticism just make us go, oh, no, no. Is it because we're criticised so much as children because of the patriarchy, because it hates femme people and non-binary people, and it wants us to conform into the binary, and therefore we're so used to patriarchal criticism that when we get some actual valid criticism sorts that we should be taking on board, it just makes us feel like we're being criticised as children again, and then we just can't...
Deborah is just replaying the conversation we had this afternoon when I said, are you going to wear that top?
That's what's happening. No, I'll tell
you... It is confronting though, isn't it? Criticism. Especially if it's your mum. But they don't mean it. They mean it in a loving way. My mum, who is a delightful creature, she is so beautiful and the mummiest of the mums in my friend circle, she once said to me when I get my ears pierced for the second time, oh, it makes you look like a slut! Which I didn't think it did, but apparently so.
But also, there's nothing wrong with being a slut.
No.
That should have been your comeback. I mean, the thing is, when you're 14 and you say to your mum, there's nothing wrong with being a slut, she doesn't... Also, I don't think we'd got to that point then where slut was not a pejorative and had been reclaimed.
No,
it was
not
at all. It was a different era when just slut equaled bad and we felt bad about ourselves when we were called one.
Having four holes in your ears and not two, that's what it meant.
I think what it was is you were creating extra orifices and that's what she didn't like. It's true, that's what it is. Piercings are orifices and they make your mother nervous. She doesn't like the orifices you have and would gladly sew those up. She doesn't want extra orifices.
You've made my mum sound a bit weirder than she is.
No, no, I just think mothers in general with teenage daughters, obviously now there are a lot of enlightened mothers who are just like, you're a sexual being and I understand that.
Slut it up, darling.
And hopefully, if I were a mother of a teenage daughter, I wouldn't be saying slut it up, darling. I think that's a bit much. But I think I would be saying, there's no such thing as a slut. And
oh, it's like Santa. Like we've been told that there's this mythical creature called a slut that comes all the time.
That was a perfect punchline to a joke. That none of us, the setup was so good we weren't expecting a punchline.
Oh my God.
And you provided one.
That's going in my show.
Oh, that is a piece of spontaneous comedy.
If only we were recording this.
Have you guys been following Douglas High? No. Okay. Terrible shooting in America, and the Douglas High students basically have said this is going to be the last mass shooting at a school, and we are going to get assault rifles banned. And I mean, they've been called snowflakes. They've been criticised massively, and they've been called snowflakes. How anyone could call a teenager who's just been in a traumatic mass shooting where their friends have died and is happy to get on a plane or a coach and go to Washington, demand an audience with the president and speak passionately and powerfully about this experience, which they, you know, they must have post-traumatic stress disorder during this time, and speak so powerfully and actually make meaningful change. A snowflake is extraordinary to me. But the most extraordinary criticism is the conspiracy theories. Have you heard about this?
Yeah.
So some people are saying they're actors. That they're actors and they've been hired to pretend to be high school students. NRA people are saying they're not real students, obviously. They're too articulate. They're too good at this. They've been media trained. They're obviously just like 25-year-old out-of-work actors on Broadway who are like, have been auditioning for a while, nothing's really worked out, and they're like, I look pretty young. I think I could play a traumatized student who has been through a mass shooting and I could go to Washington. And this is the conspiracy theory that's currently going around. And some of the responses from the students have been excellent. My favorite was, if you'd seen me in my high school production of Fiddler on the Roof, you would not think that I was an actor up to this task. I've got video. Tradition. So I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about conspiracy theorists, because they are critics of something they have to invent. So they invent the thing they're criticizing. So it's like going to a Broadway show, inventing a whole other Broadway show and critiquing that Broadway show. And I was thinking about my favorite conspiracy theory, which is the 9/11 conspiracy theorists. Do you guys know about the 9/11 conspiracy theories? So that there were actually bombs in the base of the World Trade Center, and that's what really brought it down. And I always think, because people work backwards and they go, oh, but a building wouldn't fall that way. Oh, but a plane wouldn't crash that way. Oh, but it would be too difficult to steer the plane into the building. Oh, but why is there this on the ground? And I sort of think they never really step back and go, how did this begin? So I sort of have imagined, I always imagine in my mind, the young PR guys that must have gone to George W. Bush, who they believe was the one who started this false flag attack, because that's what the conspiracy theorists say. They say, look, George Bush needed an excuse to invade Afghanistan and Iraq, so he created a false flag attack. In other words, he wanted a Middle Eastern country to attack America so that he had the justification to do it. And I think, I can see that. I can see George Bush wanting that, and I can see how it would begin. But then, like, I just imagine, like, you'd have to hire some creatives to do it, to come up with the ideas. And I just always imagine the young PR guys who were sent into the Oval Office to pitch. Because there must have been those, if that's the case. And I just imagine them going in and going, okay, Mr. President, we've got an idea. We know you want a spectacular false flag attack. You need something where people say, this is unequivocal, this is the worst thing that's ever happened in America, it's got to be spectacular. Can't just be the same old, things we've seen before. So we're thinking planes into buildings. Amazing, spectacular, you know, you're gonna have, it's the footage for CNN is gonna be incredible. And George Bush going, yeah, I like it, good, good. That's spectacular, certainly, yes, great. Okay, but this is the best part. We're not sure what damage the planes are gonna do to the buildings. So we'd like to put bombs at the foot of the building, just to make sure it's really, you know, something else. We don't want to be giving you what some of the other PR agencies are going to be offering you, which is kind of ordinary. We want to make sure this goes up. Okay, great. So people are going to think the terrorists did planes and bombs. No, that's the beauty of this. The bombs are secret. What? Why are the bombs secret? They've just got to be secret. So people think that the planes did all the damage, but really the planes did half the damage and the bombs did the rest of the damage. But everyone's got to think the planes did all the damage. Okay, guys, this is too complicated now. There's no need for secret bombs. Like, let's just do the planes thing. It's easy, it's simple. Whatever damage they do, I feel it's going to be enough that people are going to go, that was really bad. No. Mr. President, you need the bombs. Okay, well, in that case, the bombs need to be bombs. Like, we need to say, hey, there were planes, there were bombs. They did both. No. The bombs need to be secret. Okay, guys, the thing with bombs, it's really hard to do them secretly because they're bombs. It's really fucking obvious when they go off, guys. There's no need to make the bombs secret. If you want to do bombs, I'm down with bombs. I'm down with planes, I'm down with bombs, but I don't want to do the bombs secretly. It's too much of a chance that's going to come out. People are going to be like, but I saw a bomb go off. Mr. President, it's very key to our plan and to our branding agency that these bombs be secret. We need people to think the planes did all the work, even though the bombs did half the work. Why, guys? Why? You're just fucking with my head. Why is this important to you? It's just important, sir. Just trust us on this one. We're the experts. You're just a president. We do PR. And then at this point, he goes, All right, fine. If it's so important to you and you really think you can make the bomb secret, fine. So we'll just have these passenger planes go into buildings. Yes. But not the planes that you think they are. What? We'll tell people they're passenger planes, but really we're going to send military planes into the buildings. It's too difficult to send passenger planes into buildings. We're going to send military planes into the buildings. Why don't we just send the military planes into the buildings and say they've been hijacked? No!
passenger planes. It's got to look like passenger. Well, where are you going? What are you going to do with the passenger planes? We're going to land them on an island off Hawaii and pay the people to live there forever and just not tell anyone. Guys, this is the plot of Lost. This is too complicated. Mr. President, let us do our job. We're going to scatter some random passports around of people who we want everyone to think are the terrorists. Just, well, won't it look really bad if there's just like a full passport there? Like, surely that's going to look wrong. No! It's going to look right. And then we're going to fly... Well, we're going to make it look like we've flown a plane into the Pentagon, right? But there's going to be no plane at all. No plane at all. Why don't we just fly a plane into the Pentagon? Because we want to use our holograms. That is genuinely the conspiracy theory. Hologram planes. Just fly a plane in, guys. I'm the president. I don't want hologram planes. We've got some new technology. We really want to try it out, Mr. President. Stick with us on this one. All right, you seem to know what you're doing. What I love about the response to Douglas High is how incredible these teenagers really are. I just want to read you some of the responses. This is from Sarah Chadwick. She says, we should change the names of AR-15s to Marco Rubio because they are so easy to buy. And Jacqueline Corran, who says, you're missing the point. This is Twitter, by the way, if that's not clear. He says, you're missing the point. We don't want to take away your guns. We just want to prevent Americans from owning assault weapons and to tighten the methods at which a person can purchase a firearm. Sorry, at NRA, the children are winning. Thoughts and prayers. Their incredible and consistent response is just phenomenal to watch. And they really give me hope that the future of this world is in good hands if we can just get it to them, if we can get it to this next generation who are inclusive, who do understand gender fluidity, who do understand that something like America being owned by the NRA is destroying their generation and are taking back that power, who are like so feminist in their intent, so socialist in their intent. I really feel they're going to turn it around. But we've just, as this sort of middle generation, got to wrangle it so that they just get it. We've got to find a way to sustain the world as it stands without some terrible, terrible thing happening in terms of, you know, war or climate change. Because if we do, it's going to be in the hands of people like Cameron Caskey, who says, David Hogg, who was accused of being an actor, who was accused of being one of these out-of-work drama students, David Hogg is smart, funny, and diligent, he says in defense of his friend who survived the shooting and went to Washington, D.C. He is smart, funny, and diligent. But my favorite thing about him is undoubtedly that he's actually a 26-year-old felon from California. Thank you very much.
It really feels like a moment, doesn't it? Like with these kids, how they've taken control of their own story, like the way that they're not letting people at the NRA or other people who are saying that they're making this up, they're telling their own story and they're being so courageous. Yeah. And so...
And they're just not backing down. They're no. just saying, we're going to keep going. And the things that they've done include, just so that you know, what they've managed to achieve in a short period of time. I saw this on Facebook today. In just 9 days, students have pushed for a CNN town hall, forced Rubio commitments, squeezed the president to propose a bump stock ban, and that's a device that makes more bullets come out of an already terrifying gun, pressured advertisers to stop funding the NRA, crowdsourced millions of dollars for a march. They've done more in 9 days than politicians have been able to do in years. Direct action is the way forward. We can convince politicians to do what we want if they think they're going to lose power. The more we go to Number 10 or the White House or Canberra and say, you work for us. We don't want this. You have to change or you will lose power. The more we do that, what they want is to continue power. So the more it becomes clear
that the segment of society that they're underrepresenting or that they're marginalising will vote. You know, if you are a young person, a person of colour, a trans person, we need to get everybody voting and everyone vocal that they're voting and allies saying, I as a cis person will not vote for you if you don't legislate on behalf of my trans sisters and brothers. That's what we need to be saying. Because some segments of society, you know, if you're a minority ethnic person, you're a minority. And that's why you don't get legislation for you. So the majority has to step up and ally hard and say what how you legislate for my friends will affect my vote. Because it's not going to change until we start doing that, until we start letting them know. Our guest today is an award-winning stand-up comedian, an award-winning actor, multi-award. She's got more awards than anybody except George Clooney. And the co-creator of the television show Rosehaven. Please welcome to the stage the wonderful Celia Pergola!
Nice. I meant the dojo thing as a compliment. I'm not sure that I entirely know what it is.
Dojo is a karate house. Do I look like I'm wax on, wax off?
You've got a kind of kimono vibe.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm rocking a dojo look.
But it is a compliment because she's saying that you've come out of a dojo and you look fresh, like you've just totally wiped out maybe, I don't know, 40 or 50 dudes Kill Bill style.
Oh, maybe I've been fighting men's rights activists.
Yes, probably.
Just flipping.
Knowing you, I'd say, yeah, probably.
Flipping them over my shoulder.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In reality, I have no suffragitsu.
Did you just come up with that? That was very good.
Yeah.
Thinking about criticism, because you told me this afternoon that's what we're going to be talking about. And I've realised that I actually have a very special skill to hear everything as criticism.
Oh. Even things that aren't criticism.
Yeah, just you looking at me right now is like, I'm sorry.
Judgmental glare. No, it's not, but it was a warm embrace.
No, it's not you. It's very much
so
me.
So what sort of examples? Like,
I think it might have started, I went to an all-girls high school.
Oh, that'll do it. Explain no more.
Well, this is a very old joke, but just for context, I went to an all-girls high school. The number one most commonly used phrase in any all-girls high school is, behind my back. And the second most common is, right to my face. You could never tell. Like, genuinely, it was a life. It was 5 years, but when you're there, it's like,
oh, yeah.
A lifetime of people saying things like, I love your outfit. And you're like, do you or not? I can't tell. Like, you don't. The sarcasm. So I think I grew up never actually knowing what was a real compliment and what's a veiled sort of insult. And I always have a way of pulling an insult out of a compliment.
Yeah.
Well, I think women are so criticised. Like, every billboard criticises us. It's an implied criticism, isn't it? Every time you see a woman on a billboard who is smooth and
like,
toned.
Is this you? Nah, you suck.
It's basically what it says.
But why isn't it you? Could be you. You suck.
But you haven't bothered for it to be you. I went into this big venue that we use for the Guild of Feminists in London, which is sort of like also lots of chamber orchestras are there and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they have these huge billboards out the front of whoever's on. And often it's like famous celloists and stuff, who I don't know because I don't know famous celloists, but I can tell.
Oh, don't you? We all do.
I can tell they're famous because there's billboards of them. Yeah. But sometimes it's comedians and stuff. And one day I walked in and I didn't know that I was going to be on the billboard. And it was a photo of me, like from a photo shoot where I'd borrowed this big feather hat. I don't know if anyone's seen the picture,
yeah,
but it's
usual.
Like, it's like wings. Yeah. And I was standing there like posed with my hands on my hips. And it was from, the shot's probably a year old, and I was doing a lot of yoga at the time, so I think I was tighter. I was more toned and I was tighter. Also, my hair was all kind of cute, and I looked really fierce, and I walked under it, and I was with my goddaughter, and she said, oh, let's get a picture in front of it. Or I did, I can't remember, one of us. And one of us wanted a picture in front of the poster of me. And then, so I looked at the picture of me with my goddaughter in front of the poster, and I thought, I don't look as good as that.
Oh, my God.
And I was comparing myself to my own billboard.
Are you telling me that even when it's you, it's unrealistic?
Yes.
Come on!
Yes, that's what I'm telling you. I'm telling you that after that, every time I walked into that building, I scurried in because I realised I couldn't live up to my own billboard. And that's the thing. It's true, though. Nobody on a billboard looks like the billboard because it's you in the best lighting. Like, it wasn't Photoshopped. I mean, it was probably a bit because it was huge, and otherwise your pores look like mountains, but it wasn't unrealistically photoshopped. It wasn't like they'd chopped half my hips off. They were still big, but it was, you know, you're in beautiful lights, beautiful makeup, and I was just looking at it going, I will never be that, really. I'll only be that in that shot. And then I realised, like, every time I saw a billboard, I imagined the real person standing underneath it going, but they photoshopped out my cellulite. Or, but all the clothes were pegged in at the back.
Do you know
what I was in pain.
There'd be so many people walking past that going, I'm sorry, you probably make a lot of women feel really bad about themselves as well. I mean that as a compliment. Like, I've seen that photo and it's super hot and, like, it intimidates me. I'd see that and be like, look at this feminist chick, if only I was this woman.
I'm a feminist, but my billboard makes other women feel bad about themselves.
Maybe.
I didn't ask for the billboard, though. I didn't ask for the billboard. And also, I think I'm allowed because I'm not in that bracket of super attractive. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, this is dangerous territory.
No, but I'm not. I'm not like petite and blonde and like, I don't know what things.
See, this is the other thing I was going to get to, is that it's the self-criticism. We find a way. I was starting from a place of, I've seen that photo and it's hot and you're gorgeous.
Sure, and but that, you know what I mean?
I absolutely know
I'm
what
you mean. I'm not like a size six, like... I don't know, there's a vision that I have of what the stereotypical attractive woman is, and it isn't me. That's true, though. Like, I'm not saying, oh, poor me. I like the way I look, but I don't think I'm objective. This is therapy, isn't it? I should stop. But I'm not objectively hot. Well, like, you know what I mean? Like,
no,
I think,
but no, also, I'm not. I'm stuck.
I can look that way if somebody, if I have a team of people around me judging me. Anyone can look A-list if you're judged by the right people.
Oh, that's it's true. It's grooming.
It's totally grooming. So, yes, if you groom me, don't do that. Anybody, I think that's anybody, though. I still feel I'm allowed a billboard because I don't conform to a stereotype.
What I'm stuck back at is you saying my billboard makes all the women feel shit. So, but I'm like, my billboard makes all the women feel shit. I think it does. I sort of said that in a way that maybe it'd make us feel better when we see those billboards of people we don't know that seem so unrealistic and think of that woman's got everything that I don't got. That woman thinks she's wonderful. How could she not? Look how gorgeous she is. And the thought of that woman walking past her own billboard and going, oh, I can't even live up
to
that.
Yeah, that's what I do now. I imagine whenever I see like a bus stop, I imagine the real woman standing next to it and I imagine how she looks with no makeup in normal light. Or even, if I'm feeling, you know, like I need extra help, under iridescent lights, like under those, under fitting room lights. I think, no, this is how she looks and this is how she feels. That billboard is a lie to everyone, including her, and it really helps me because I find billboards to be criticism. And that's ridiculous, but it is true. Just what, you know, and then we're discouraged by the patriarchy from leadership roles. We're constantly told... Every time I see an all-male panel or an all-male panel with one woman on the end who's being edged out, that's a criticism. It's a criticism of women in general, that we shouldn't be on panels.
Yeah, I guess just in my mind, because of our line of work, the criticism is a lot more personal.
Oh, yeah.
Specific.
Sure.
I know, but just here, as you say that, I'm
in
like,
general. Yeah. Well, actually, this was my challenge this week, and I want to get it off my chest. I did a show somewhere on this tour where I was only doing one night. And I thought I had booked for the guests a group of women who are incredibly diverse. And then we realized I was only in town for one night, and that night they happened not to be there. And so we didn't have a guest. And it was really hard to find a guest or a co-host because everyone shows on at the same time at this particular place. So we found a brilliant co-host who was able to fly in, and we found a brilliant guest who was on the fringe. And it was a really, really, really good fun show. And afterwards, there was a review, which I never look at my reviews, but someone had added the reviewer saying, no, look at the history of the podcast. They do a lot of diversity. And so then I kind of had to click. And the reviewer had said two things. One is I looked around and basically virtually everyone in the audience was white, middle class and straight. And this is because Deborah is drawing those people to her, because her podcast is all about white, straight, middle-class women, and it's all from their point of view. They were all referring to their husbands, and they were all referring to having businesses and that kind of thing, and so it will fall far from the mark if you're not in that category. And I got really, really upset, because I felt, firstly, she was reviewing the audience, and I thought, you look around that audience, you don't know who's straight, unless you're imposing your ideas of sexuality and gender expression on people. You don't know who's indigenous. Just because somebody has pale skin doesn't mean that they're white or Caucasian. I'm living with someone who's Syrian, who's very pale, and he says he has white privilege. You know, you don't know that. You certainly don't know who's middle class unless you're going, oh, working class people don't dress as well or something, some implication that you have in your mind. You don't know who's disabled. Just because someone's not in a wheelchair doesn't mean they're not disabled. So I got really angry. And I also got really angry because I feel like my commitment is over the course of the show, of available seats, i.e. my seat is not available. it's not. Too bad. It's my show. But of available seats, over half of them need to be sat in by people who are not white, straight, middle class. But I don't want to also close down voices of amazing women who are out there doing their thing because they're not in that category. I just need over half of those seats. And recently someone called me on it and said, what's your diversity in blah, 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 blah. And I counted it up and we'd hit 70%, which I thought was really good. I mean, for comedy, it's incredible. But no, no, don't applaud me for it. Don't applaud me for it. But it is, I thought it was really good. And so when she said, oh, you've basically created an audience in your own image because all you ever do is, I thought you could have just clicked on the thing and seen our previous episodes and seen who was there. I don't mind the comment, given the diversity of the show, this one was particularly white and straight. It wasn't actually fully middle class, I wouldn't say. I don't mind someone saying, I found this disappointingly homogenous, given that. But she basically had made a decision. And I got so upset and I handled it incredibly badly. I was hormonal and I was jet lagged. I did not know I was hormonal because I still don't know when my period is coming.
I figured out why that is.
Why?
I think it's because, yeah, it's the same. Every month I'm like, what is this? I think it's because I hate it so much that every time it finishes, I go, phew, glad that's never happening again.
Yes. Yes.
It's like you've ordered something online and then it's like between 5 and 7 business days. Like that for me is like, it's just going to arrive at some point in the next couple of weeks. Like that's always where I'm
at.
It
surprises me every time. And I was so hormonal and I was jet lagged. So I immediately tweeted the reviewer and said something like, you can review me but don't review my audience. You don't know who they are and that's your unconscious bias. But I also said, we're really working to include, and this review will exclude because some people will read it and go, oh, this isn't for me then. And then they won't hear Desiree Birch and Susan McComber and whoever else is on that week, Hannah Gadsby or whatever. They're not going to hear those people because you've made an act of exclusion when we're trying to include. And she said, I'm sorry if you feel it was misrepresentative, please address everything else to the editor. And I wrote to the editor and the editor said, well, we're not changing it because she has a PhD in gender studies focusing on intersectionality. And I thought, well, then please don't send it to review comedy shows because... I'm not saying, hashtag not all doctors, but... I'm sure there are some PhDs of intersectionality that have great sense of humour.
This is my main thing. This is my main thing with criticism in terms of whether I take it on board or not and whether I give it. It's two questions. It's who am I and who are you? Like, I'm not going to review and go, that light's fucked, because I don't know shit about lights. But if it's something that I know about...
Then yes.
So I feel like if it's somewhat... Yeah, so
like, there was another situation in the same place that you're referring to where...
The lights are very good, by the way.
Friends of mine were doing a drag show in a caravan. So it's three beautiful men being nanas in a caravan. And the publication sent a 20-year-old homophobe to review the show.
That's
and
the
I don't
thing.
Know. Spoiler, he didn't like it.
I mean, but anyway, I thought about it and I wrote another email saying, well, at least retract the part, because they just said no. And I said, retract the part about the audience or just say at the bottom an asterisk that says, we do not know the demographic. Also, you don't know the demographic compared to what that town normally gets, compared to who comes to the fringe. And you don't know how many queer people were there. You just don't fucking know. So please don't say that. But they didn't respond to my further emails, and she didn't respond to any further tweets. Now, I thought about it later, and I calmed down, and I thought, here's the thing. I was so indignant, and I was so put out, because I felt like lately I've really been trying more and more to center women of color, queer women, and I felt really put out, because I thought, I'm trying, why are you attacking me? Why don't you attack someone who doesn't try, like... men. And there are fucking millions of cis men at that Fringe Festival doing shows called Boys, 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 Boys All the Time.
And I love that show. It needed more boys.
Nobody comes up and says they're not fucking intersectional. And I got really upset. And then I just thought about it and I thought, do you know why my show is intersectional? Criticism. When we started, we were pretty white and straight. And people wrote in and said, hey, pretty white and straight. And we said things like, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, And then someone wrote in and went, I'm non-binary, and that makes me feel excluded. And I was like, okay, that's... And every single time we got a piece of criticism, we changed. So the only reason that this show is so intersectional, or I'm doing Suffragetten, or anything in Calais, is because of criticism. I didn't know any of this shit 2 years ago. Not shit, shouldn't say that. I didn't know any of these things 2 years ago. I didn't. I owe criticism every single thing I'm doing. Everything. It's the only reason I'm doing anything good in the world. Criticism. So I owe it a lot more than it owes me. So one shitty review from someone who didn't understand what we were doing, who I reckon, and you know what, I reckon if she heard the rest of the episodes, and what I should have done is write back and go, hey, I'm sorry that you didn't enjoy this episode, but I reckon you'd really enjoy the one about Handmaid's Tale, and I think you'd really love the one about minefields, and I really would love to direct you to some of those. And if you feel that actually your audience, you know, would enjoy some of those, maybe you could add a little addendum that says, hey, there are some other episodes that I feel are better representative. And if you don't, then that's absolutely fine. That's what I should have said. And I so my new feeling is, I have to give myself 48 hours to respond.
Absolutely.
There is always, and this is a policy in life, yeah. There's always another chance to break up with a bad boyfriend, but there's not always another chance to get back together with that person. So you should break up with a bad boyfriend. That's not right.
Yes.
There's always another chance to write an angry email. There's not always a chance to take an angry email back. So now I have to write and apologize. However.
So you're saying when someone gives you criticism, you have to wait for 48 hours?
Yeah.
What if it's face-to-face? You just stand
there for
2 days.
And lift. Just,
if it's
get some supplies. Just always carry a backpack full of baked beans. Just wherever you go.
If it's my mother saying, why is your hair at that in-between length again? I will just be like, I'll set my timer.
I do think it's important, the good thing to try and take good things out of criticism like that, and also trying to do, using it to inspire you rather than, because we get reviewed, I worry that it'll make me too safe to take risks because I don't want people to say something, yeah. They won't like it. Like this show in particular, my show this year is the first time where I think there'll be people who really will like it, and I think there's going to be people who will come knowing me from other things who really won't like it at all, but I'm doing it anyway. Other good things I think can come out of it is you can use it as an inspirational thing to get stuff done, not reviews in particular, but 2017, I had a motto rather than a resolution, and this was the only way I could get anything done. My motto for 2017 was, you'll see, you'll all see. And it made me go to the gym, it made just the spite, just look in the mirror like, I'm going to show all you haters, you're going to get it. And my backup motto was, fuck me, fuck you.
Behind my back.
Yeah, behind my back.
Right to my face.
Who knew?
So can I suggest a positive version of that, which is, don't believe me, just watch. Oh. That would be my one, because I think it's sort of got a more of an upbeat tempo.
Yeah, sort of like
a positive version.
But at the same time, your billboard makes all the women feel shit. Women feel shit.
So what I do with reviews now is I just don't read them. I get someone to read them for me. So we have management, and so I get someone at managers to read the reviews. And then they tell me if there's a useful thing to put on the poster, and then I just act as if it hasn't happened. But when I started my show, at the Adelaide Fringe, and our manager, who is like, he's got like a laser brain for comedy, he came to my show, and then he came backstage afterwards and gave me half an hour of notes, and it was incredibly confronting. The show is called Hindsight, and the first thing he said was, your show's not about hindsight, it's about anxiety. And I was like, oh, in hindsight, I wish I hadn't called it Hindsight. It was really confronting to have this man who was so brilliant. All of the notes he gave me made my show so much better, and it was a real spurring on thing to go, oh shit, I thought it was all right, but it's not all right, it's okay, but I can make it better. And it was real motivating.
It hurts to hear it. It's that taking a moment. Like anything other than it's perfect, don't change a thing, hurts straight away, but it does make it better. Also, think about all of those kids on Australia's Got Talent who really could have done with a bit of criticism. I mean, you love your kids, but just take them aside. Doesn't have to be mean, just I love it's you, like, but your singing is shit. You know?
Yeah, when it's your own child, though, I think, I don't know, I don't have children, but when it's your own child, do you not think they can sing? Is that the...
I don't know either. I don't have kids that I know of. Hey, that's an old joke. Sorry.
Somebody Somebody's leaving to tell their child they're shit, and I think you've just, she's just got up and gone, right, I'll do it now. Well, I hope she's going to the loo.
You know what? I've spent too many years listening to that banjo. It's awful. It stops tonight. It's just, enough is enough.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
In terms of feminism and criticism, we get criticised by other feminists. We get criticised by people on the internet who don't like feminism at all. How can we be more constructive criticisers? Because I think, what's your goal? This is what you were saying before, Cal. If you're criticising someone, what outcome do you want
from that criticism? Like, are you wanting the person to do something better? Are you hoping to help them? Do you just want to fuck them off? Like, is it... like,
do you just want to fuck them? And that's never the right way to criticise somebody.
No, that's nagging,
isn't it? That's in the game.
It's worked a couple of times.
That's nagging. Nagging is criticising someone, sort of saying, oh... why do you dress like that? You're so pretty.
Yeah, my favourite early example of negging was me and my friend were out at a pub in Melbourne and we were over to audition for drama school that we didn't get into. Irrelevant, but I'm just telling you. So a guy walked up to my friend Susan and went, I fucking hate your top. And she went, why don't you fuck off and stop looking at it then? And it was just the most perfect...
Did that end? I could see that ending in sex though.
Right, cut this. 7 words. This has got to be classic Nick. This is the most incredible 7 words that a person that I don't know has opened with. Bar came up to me and went, you used to be beautiful, didn't you?
Said that to who?
Me!
To you!
To me! To me!
To you!
It was amazing, because it wasn't you're ugly. It was, there was a time when you had it, but it is not this day. It was amazing.
My favourite pickup line that I ever got was along those lines, but I thought it was really funny. It didn't work, but I thought it was really funny. A guy walked up to me and went, I'm not the best looking guy in the room, but I'm the only one talking to you.
Oh, guy came out. Just opening line, just from nothing to these things. I was standing in some club. Ugh, God, I hate club. Don't get me the ideas. Came to in. So, are you desperate? I was like, excuse me? I was standing near the toilet and he thought I was in the queue for the toilet. He's like, no, are you desperate to use the bathroom? Do you need to pee? And I'm like, that's better.
No.
Like, we're going to be telling this story to our grandchildren one day. And like, well, grandkids, that's right. One day your grandfather came over and he thought, your grandmother really needed to pee and he pointed that out and the rest is history.
Look, I looked at her and I could just tell that her bladder was bloated and I thought, she is the woman with strong pelvic floor muscles for me.
It's not wrong.
But he still tells that story as well, like to himself every night as he can't sleep.
Yes!
He just lies in bed going, are you desperate? What was I... That's his I carried a watermelon moment.
You did tell me that you think I'm dressed like I'm in Dirty Dancing.
Yeah, I did. I did. I said I wish I'd worn my Dirty Dancing dress. I had a Dirty Dancing dress and I just sort of thought, oh, I'll feel more comfortable.
Because I do like watermelons, but I do not like Dirty Dancing.
What?
No, it makes me feel... Oh, I like the good old days when you'd stand on the podium by yourself and you'd make eye contact with a guy and then meet in the alley. None of this.
What? No cha-cha?
I'm from, no cha-cha. I am
no
from
merengue?
The podium era. I am from, I went to an underage nightclub called Protein, which I only figured out 10
what?
Years later. It's now a mattress factory. Coincidence? Oh.
I think mattress Protein. Factory is a good name for a nightclub.
It was spelled mattress factory. Yeah. It was spelled protein like chicken. Like chicken has protein and the O was an orange. Okay, do you want to hear the most humiliating thing that's ever happened to me?
Yes.
Oh my god, this is the worst thing that ever happened.
Go on.
So you wouldn't know it to look at me. So this is unusual that I'm in a dress, as you would know. Usually yeah. I live in jeans and a t-shirt. I'm a 15-year-old boy in the body of a 35-year-old woman, okay? Comfort is my dream, right? But there was a time when I was under at like 16, because girls' school.
There was
white miniskirts, crop tops, because you'd wear white because they had the black lights in there so you'd glow while you're on the podium, right? This is the... Oh. I know. It's a time... if I was to describe my current wardrobe, it was a lot of mesh and dragons. And one night in Protein, I was making out with some guy. Oh, my God. And a security... Got a tap on the shoulder. Turn around. Anyway. Hands outside of pants, please.
What?
I am not explaining this to you, Deborah.
I don't know what happened. What happened, Cal? What happened? She was on a podium in a white skirt.
Yeah, why is the... I'm confused also, Celia. So
I wasn't wearing pants.
Oh.
Hands outside of pants. So my hands were not outside of the pants where they should have been. They were, in fact, inside the pants. I said I wasn't explaining it
in
to you,
your...
but I... No.
In his pants?
Yes.
So you had your
Can
hands...
Can someone get a whiteboard?
You had
I was making out with a guy and I had my hands in his pants. Are you happy?
No.
Neither am I.
Neither was the bouncer. Wow.
I'm not proud, okay? This is early, it was the 90s.
That does explain a lot. If you weren't in the 90s, it was an era. Just give us a shout if you were a child in the 90s. If you were too innocent to be with Celia in the 90s, just give us a cheer. So you don't remember the 90s?
No.
You don't remember the 90s?
No.
What? How old? When were you born?
1997.
Stop it.
Get him!
Have you seen The Graduate, young man? Because I could be a very nice Mrs. Robinson for you. Watch it and get back to me.
See, here's the other thing as well. Like, it's terrifying. I'm glad. Like, it's so much scarier now with, like, young people, like, sent with technology and sending images
so
and stuff.
Much
like,
scarier.
We just do sketches of our boobs instead of the teacher. This is a spoiler for my show as well, but and I'm not proud of this as well, but one time I let a guy film something sexual. I was 20, because you just... And when I say... So it's not a sex tape. Like, there wasn't, like, storyboards and a tripod and shit. What I'm saying is I dated a guy who had a phone, right? But the good thing for me is that was, like, 10 years ago, so and it's a Nokia. The chances of that being any kind of high dev, it's just going to be blurry shapes and, like, the sound of a tiny dog crying. Nothing.
Oh, you're fine on a Nokia.
Yeah, fine on a Nokia.
Because it won't be clear that it's you.
No. Unless you... And like there's going to be
unless
charged
Unless you said
cables.
It's a Celia Piccola right into the lens.
Oh, I shouldn't have done that, should I?
Hello, guilty feminists. It is Deborah. I am briefly interrupting your podcast listening to let you know that my film Say My Name is going to be screened in London on the 22nd of February at Film Fest International. If you would like to find out more, just go to filmfestinternational.com, 10 a.m. in the morning. It's an early one on the 22nd of February. And I think I'm going to be doing a Q&A afterwards, and I will certainly be there to have a selfie with you or sign your book. Say My Name is also going to be on in Blackpool at the Winter Gardens Festival on the 17th of March. So give that a Google to find out more details. On the 5th of March, I am going to be hosting the Stylist Remarkable Women Awards. I'm terribly excited about this. So if you go to stylist.co.uk, you can find out more about this. I believe you can nominate women and vote for them. And I will let you know more about this. Keep an eye on my Instagram feed, dfdubz, D-U-B-Z, and also at the Guilty Feminist Instagram feed. We will be touring around the country. I'll be coming around with some of your favorite Guilty Feminist co-hosts doing stand-up comedy and a big live Guilty Feminist tour with everything you love about it in big venues with lots and lots of fun songs, comedy, chat, everything that you love. It's not going to be recorded. It's not going to be a podcast. It's going to be one show that we tour around. And we've already let you know some of the dates. In our second week, we're going to be at Ipswich, Colchester, Richmond, and Southend-on-Sea. That's on the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th of May. There are dates from the 1st of May till the 30th of May, all over the country. So check out our website, guiltyfeminist.com or ticketmaster.co.uk to find those dates. Come along, check it out. It's going to be a big, big celebration. Do not miss it. Global Pellage is back for another exciting season. We will be appearing live and recording the show on the 23rd and the 24th of March at 4 p.m. at King's Place in King's Cross in London. It's our diversity-based comedy panel show. And you, the hive mind of the audience, get to play. Do not miss it. Go to kingsplace.co.uk to get tickets before they all go. Help refugees in Calais are in dire need of tents and sleeping bags. Please check out their website to find out how you can donate and get them there. As always, my book is available at Waterstones, Amazon, and in all good bookshops. And if you would prefer that I read it to you because you enjoy the podcast, then it is available on Audible. Back to the podcast.
Please welcome to the stage the wonderful, the only, the fabulous, the right here. It's Cal Wilson.
Now, I understand that criticism is not just criticism from critics, but as a performer, I think of criticism as generally coming from someone who has been paid to tell me I'm shit. So I was thinking about all the criticisms that I've had in my life, not all from reviewers, but I was just going through a list of all the criticism that I've never forgotten. One piece was when I was 17, we did a play at high school, and it was called The Insect Play, and me and my best friend were dressed up as Beatles, not like John, Paul, Ringo and George, but actual Beatles. And we had amazing makeup on. We had white face, but then a black border around our face and big red cheeks. And we gave our Beatles sort of northern accents from England because we wanted to make them sound really entertaining. And afterwards, the judge said it was entertaining, but would have preferred regional Kiwi accents. And the thing is, there's only one Kiwi accent, and this is it. Actually, that's not true. There are loads, but they all sound the same to you. So... The reason I remember that so clearly is when we washed our makeup off, it was such cheap makeup that we'd had allergic reactions to it. And so when we washed our makeup off, we just had rashes in the shape of the makeup. So for the whole week, we looked like Beatles, even though we had no makeup on. One time, my older youth group friends were getting sick of me cracking jokes all the time, and one of them said, "You try to be funny 100% of the time, but you're only funny 80% of the time." Which at the time mortified me, but now, as a professional comedian, I think that's quite a good hit rate. One time I was asked to MC the big gay out in Brisbane, which I was so thrilled to be asked to do. It was a fantastic day. There were so many gorgeous drag queens, and I felt disappointingly and underwhelmingly straight. And I'd been picked up from the airport by a driver and with a car, excitingly. And... sometimes, like when you do a corporate gig, they send a car with a driver, and this time the driver had brought his wife with him, which you're not supposed to do, but that was okay. Hello, Frank. Hello, Robin. And they dropped me off at the big gay out, and they said, "We'll be just here to pick you up afterwards." And I did the gig, and I tried my hardest, and it was crazy, and there was just lots of dancing and everything. And then when I got back into the car, the driver's wife went, "Well, we could hear everything. And when you got on stage, all we could hear was meep, 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 meep." It's like, you're not even supposed to be in the fucking car. What are you talking about? My husband is a very beautiful man. He's very blunt. I showed him a new top. It was kind of a peasant smock. I said, "What do you think of my new top?" He said, "It's nice. It makes you look a bit pregnant." To which I replied, "Does it? That's nice. Good to have had 20 minutes wear out of it before I throw it away." My grandmother was quite a critical woman. She criticised me for being too clumsy, for not eating enough. She told me I was too short. My favourite two comments that she gave me, one was, "It's wonderful that your parents can still be proud of you." And once when I went back home, when I was in my mid-20s and I had platinum blonde hair, I hadn't seen it for 6 months, and the first thing she said was, "They told me your hair was the same colour as mine, but it's not. It's dirty white." To which I replied, "That's because all the guys I've been giving blowjobs to don't wash their hands." I didn't, but I had to do something to claw that back as a victory, yeah? And there was a review that I got for a show I did 20 years ago. It was called "Cal Wilson is the Antichrist," and it was about me being a born-again teenager. I was a born-again Christian. I saw the light and I switched it off because it was wasting electricity. I did a whole lot of things. I talked about the Lord's Prayer and I rewrote it using audience suggestions, and I got a review that was so awful it made me cry for a week. Like, I would get up in the morning, I would remember the review, and I would just cry until it was time to go on stage. I looked for this online today, I couldn't find it, it's not online, but I do remember some of the lines. I remember it, the one paragraph ended, "Something, something, something, then descended into a hell where there are no laughs." Which wasn't true. Other people were laughing except for this woman. And then she quoted a bunch of the best audience answers and said some of the punchlines were her own. It was absolutely vicious. It was a personal attack on me, and because the newspaper that she wrote it for was the sponsor of the comedy festival, they published a synopsis of the review every day for the rest of the week. So, and the synopsis was even more distilled vitriol, and like, it was such an awful review, I had people stopping me on the street to go, "What did you do to that reviewer?" Like, I'd start each show going, "Has anyone seen the review?" And everyone would go, "Yes," and I go, "I don't know what I did to it, I must have accidentally fucked her husband." Like, I don't know. It was, it just destroyed me. It just killed me. And like, I'm over it now. Like, I realised that it was more about her than it was about me. Happy people don't try and stop someone from doing the thing that they love. Like, she offered no constructive criticism. It was all just a takedown. And so when I was looking for the review online today, I was sort of half disappointed, half glad that I couldn't find it. And then I found an article written by the reviewer about how she and her husband were unexpectedly made redundant a couple of years ago. And I didn't mind that at all. Now, I thought what I would do, because there are great reviewers, like, don't get me wrong, and I also know that no one cares about reviews except the reviewer and the person getting reviewed. And there are lovely reviewers, especially the ones that have come in tonight. They are so hot. So I thought what I would do is I would dissect the sort of reviewers that there are. So, like, a great reviewer doesn't necessarily give you a great review. They should definitely critique the show, and you should know more about the show than what they thought of it. I was thinking how difficult it would have been if, like, the Judeo-Christian God had created the world but had accidentally created a reviewer first. I don't know, maybe that's what happened. So maybe he made the first man and then he dropped him before he was fully dry. And then when he went to pick him up, he sort of stood on the head by mistake. And then even though he popped the head back into shape by blowing into the mouth, you know, the way you can kind of pop a bottle out again, like, sort of, like, blew the head out again, but there was still a wee crack in the back of the head and all the nice leaked out, sort of like the yellow leaking out of a cream egg. So that would be the first reviewer. And so, if God had created the reviewer first, the review of the world might have gone like this. "In the hands of another deity, the world might have been created much more efficiently. I quite enjoyed the set design and lighting, but frankly, it's 6 days, it dragged on. Also, why put the day of rest at the end? We could have done with an interval." And then if he'd started reviewing God's animals, like, "Duck, a waterproof hen, 1 star. Rhinoceros, a hippo with a unicorn complex. Could improve its appearance by getting a skin that actually fits, 1 star. Sheep, inside out self-propelling Ugg boot. 1 star. Starfish, 1 star. The art of reviewing by reviewing things that aren't comedy as if they were comedy. So I thought maybe it would be easy to review a chair rather than try, like, to literally be an armchair critic. So I thought I would illustrate the different sorts of reviews that there are. So there are the fair reviews that admit their bias. So they would say something like, "I disliked this chair. I am more into beanbags. To its credit, though, the rest of the audience loved the chair and could not stop sitting in it. I'm
I'm not its target demographic, but if you enjoy Cheers, you will love this one. Then there are the positive, supportive reviews. I've watched this chair grow from a piece of raw wood to a plank, to a footstool, and finally to the armchair it was always meant to be. I look forward to next year's chaise lounge. And then there are the reviews that take issue with the fact that the chair is a chair. The chair disappointed with its use of stock standard four legs, back and armrest. It's always great to see a chair that goes out of its way to have 8 or 9 legs. Or a hover pedal and uses video and social media. Well, then there are the reviews that miss the point entirely. This chair is a shit table. There's no way you could fit 6 people around it, let alone host a dinner party. Work harder next time, chair. Then there's the undercurrent of resentment review. I know a lot about chairs. I'm basically a chair myself. In fact, I'm a better chair than the chair I saw tonight. I am angry that the chair gets people to sit on it while all I can do is write about it. My head still hurts from where all the yellow leaked out. Then you've got the inexperienced reviewer who's been seconded in because the proper reviewers are busy reviewing the rest of the furniture warehouse. Chairs! They're not as good as AFL. Then you get the inexperienced reviewers who are also prone to the spoiler. I loved this chair. It was for sitting on. The highlight was the surprise bit where it turns out the seat comes off the chair and turns into a cushion. There were also some great surprise cameos from other chairs, including secret guests, armchair, sofa, and ottoman. And then you have the personal prejudice reviewer. Chairs aren't funny. All they talk about is periods.
I wanted on the record that I a number of times tried to get this conversation around to feminist critique. And if that didn't happen, do not address your tweets to me.
I don't want any comments about the wristy in an underage nightclub in Ringwood East in the 90s. All right? I'm sharing that with you.
Do you want
that? I'm not ashamed. I am ashamed. Obviously, I'm so ashamed. But I'm also not ashamed.
You're less ashamed than you are.
What's funny about that is he's out there somewhere. Who's that guy?
He knows. He'll know. Celia, I want you to do this.
Like, I'm on TV sometimes. Like, the thought of me being in his house, he just, like, turns on the ABC. He's like, oh, that chick grabbed my dick. Consensually. Right, sorry. Yes.
But what if he doesn't recognise you until you, like, put your hand up near your face and he's like, ah!
It might be only clear to him when you're under those iridescent lights. The ones that turn everything white, black and black, white, or whatever it is that it does.
No.
Can you do this in a character?
The only accent I could do is the super nanny, which will sound racist in the UK.
Won't it?
Well, I mean, it'll be offensive.
It's not.
Do you remember the super nanny? That your behaviour is unacceptable.
No. Yeah.
It's only going to be offensive to the super nanny.
Okay, here's a piece of criticism I rejected. I had somebody say, I was doing like a mock Australian accent, and someone wrote in and said, your anti-Australian rhetoric is getting worse, blah, 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 blah. You can't. And do you know what I said? I said, I didn't say fuck you. I said, firstly, I'm a citizen of Australia and a citizen of Britain. Both Britain and Australia are developed nations who have rivalries. Neither of them as countries are marginalised. If I were to be doing an accent in Australia of a marginalised people, that would be a problem. But the status between Australia and Britain is not one in which either is marginalised. There is a healthy back and forth. We do the ashes. So this is like taking the piss out of a brother or a sister. And therefore, there is no oppression and there is no power imbalance. So I think you'll find that you just have no sense of humour. I've just lost at least one fan because they're going to hear that and go, I feel really upset now. And listen, I love you, whoever you are. You were trying to do a good thing, but no. Okay, do Supernova.
Okay,
go.
Okay. Oh, God. Okay. It's been a big night for me. Jeez. Right. Can I just say one reason why? The only reason I know how to do her accent is because I've found it really fun to make her say stuff that she wouldn't say, like, hit him. Come down to their level, look him in the eye, and give him some heroin. Like that. All right. All right. Follow the Guilty Feminists on Twitter at GuiltFilmPod. Come back, can't keep. All right. Check out our Instagram.
What?
Instagram.com/TheGuiltyFeminist. Stop doing that. Get off that ladder, Carol. Mum, what are you doing? Grab him. Like our Facebook page. Sign up to our mailing list to get notified as soon as a new episode is released. I'm now Dick Van Dyke, like earlier. Okay. And please go to iTunes and rate, review, and subscribe. It helps other people find the podcast.
Yeah!
That is unacceptable. It's unacceptable.
Anything to plog Celia Piccola?
Yeah, so I am doing a new stand-up show that is totally finished. Because we're also writing Rose Heaven Season 3 right now. I'm spending a lot of time with the red one. How great is this? Usually people go, oh, the redhead, Luke McGregor, the redhead or the nervous one. But the other day someone went, where's the red one? I'm like, that is the best new nickname ever. But my stand-up show is called All Talk. I think if you like this, you will like that. It's a lot of this stuff. It's called All Talk because the rest of that saying is all talk, no action. Like, that's a bad thing. Like, oh, you're all talk, no action. But talk is my action. It's like, oh, silly, she's all talk. Yes, my job. But I'm hoping that talk is an important step on the way to action. So if you'd like to come to that, I was very much appreciate it.
We would love to come to that. Powell Wilson, what have you got to plug?
I'm doing my show Hindsight, which is not necessarily about hindsight.
Do you know what I would have called it?
What?
2020. But then people would think it was about the year 2020. Don't call it that. Call it Hindsight.
Or cricket.
Cricket.
Oh, imagine now, I would have got a whole lot of guys in white trousers.
Don't let me near it.
Sorry. Pants outside pants, please.
But can you do that? Can you do that as your show title next year? Hands outside pants, please.
Never forget it.
Burned into my brain.
Hands outside pants.
Hands outside of pants, please. Don't know what he looks like because I exploded. Like into shame, like my organs were so embarrassed to be with me they tried to escape out of that.
I was so much more naive than you as a teenager, like because I was a good Christian girl at youth group and I was 15 and I was going out with a 19-year-old. My parents wouldn't let me leave the property because they were adults and understood what was happening, but I was so naive that he was kissing me goodnight on the porch one night and he had his hand on the side of my boob and he was like rubbing his thumb on the side of my boob and I was in my head going, how embarrassing, he doesn't realise he's touching my boob.
Oh, that's some beautiful naivety there.
Yes. Was I in the middle of plugging something? My show Hindsight is on at the Brisbane Comedy Festival, the Sydney Comedy Festival, Perth and Melbourne.
Go see it. All right. So I'm going to do this, which is our out. Oh, before I do that, there is a charity. Who is the charity?
I'm here from Fair Agenda. Fair Agenda is an online community that campaigns for a fair and equal future for women. We're 37,000 people strong and growing. We use our collective people power to win change on a whole bunch of different issues affecting women. In the past, we've campaigned and helped win additional funding for family violence services and stopped cuts to working parents' time to care for their babies. And right now we're campaigning on two big things. The first is to address sexual violence on university campuses, which we're doing in partnership with students and survivor groups, and also to end the criminalisation of abortion in Queensland.
Can I just say, as somebody who left Queensland many years ago, is abortion still illegal there?
It's still in the Crimes Act laws from 1899, still in force. But there's going to be a vote later this year, which
I apologise on behalf of my home state.
Yeah. And also, please sign up to get involved in the campaigns, which you can do at fairagenda.org.
Thank you very much, by the way. That was beautifully done. You have been listening to The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Brussels-White, guest co-host Carl Wilson, and our very special guest, Celia Piccola. The producer was Tom Selinsky for The Spontaneity Shop, and Jeff Ring for Australian Comedy Management. Thanks to everyone at the Malthouse, as well as all of you for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit guiltyfeminist.com. White, we've been The Guilty Feminists. Good night. There's an episode that we recorded last time in Melbourne about self-defense, which is I'm so excited for it to come out. It hasn't come out yet, but I'm so excited.
Oh, yes, there was a young, so excited.
There was a young Melbourne
Sydney.
Woman.
It was totally Sydney.
Oh, it was Sydney. Sorry.
But when it comes down to it,
it was going so well.
Melbourne.
It was going so well. I've killed it. So if I come back to Melbourne, will you come to any more shows? No, no. Go to Sydney, bitch. You like
it
so much?
I'm generally okay with it. I don't mind Sydney. Every time I go there, in my mind, it just goes, ah, put your shirt back on, Sydney. That's what I think.
Do you think Sydney's got its top off?
Yeah. Sydney's walking around all confident. Put it back on. Show some shame. Melbourne has shame. Rock it up. Put a scarf on it. Speaking of criticism...
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.